You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we are back on Zoom with another edition of the M Squared TechCast.
And we have we don't have that shameless plug bell. We're going to have to simulate that somehow. Calling in from Lawrence Technological University, Dan Randomski, who's going to be talking about the fact that you're using the Centropolis Accelerator to make PPEs, right?
That's correct. Thanks for having me on the show.
All right. So let's start out with a little bit of background on what the Centropolis Accelerator is. Some people might not know.
Yeah, so we are a organization that supports anyone in Michigan that has an idea for a physical product or advanced manufacturing technology, help them with developing their business, and more importantly, commercializing their product and bringing it to market and manufacturing it right here in Michigan.
And so it's a a little over 6,000 square feet of space. You've got meeting facilities like the ones you're sitting in right now. And you've also got a prototyping lab where people can make prototypes of physical products they're interested in manufacturing, right?
Yeah, so we received some additional funding from the City of Southfield, Lawrence Tech University, Michigan Economic Development Corporation to create a co-working space in a lab. And the lab has 3D printers and machine tools to help companies prototype and develop products. And then we've been utilizing this during the COVID pandemic to actually produce some personal protection equipment and provide it to healthcare providers.
So how did this effort get started? How did you get into making PPE there?
Well, really early on, we recognized that there was a shortage of many personal protection items for healthcare providers, anything from masks to gowns to face shields, hand sanitizer. You know, the global manufacturing community, as you know, was stalled in many areas, including in China. So just about everybody that had access to manufacturing equipment and even labs like us that had access to 3D printers looked to find designs online that could be borrowed to actually make things. So we've been producing face shields, you know, which are, there's an example of one that we produce, very simple design, probably the easiest design that you can imagine. You take a look at the headband, which fits around your forehead. That is actually 3D printed with a 3D printing machine. And then you literally use these plastic sheets like you would see in binders, three-hole punch them, and then snap them into place. And then you have a very simple two-part design face shield that can be used by anyone in the hospital or in nursing homes to help protect themselves as they're caring for COVID patients.
So I know you're making these for free. You're not charging, right?
Yeah, so what we learned pretty early on is that, you know, why hospitals and others were had a scarcity of supply, it was really a lot of the assisted living centers that are caring for COVID patients in place, nursing homes that don't necessarily have budgets for masks and shields and other critical items. And so we've been targeting donating those to primarily assisted living centers that can't afford these critical items.
All right. So who are you supplying the face shields to now?
So we've been donating at no charge to some of the larger assisted living centers throughout Michigan. So one of the groups is Walton Wood, run by Sing Management. They have 7 assisted living centers in Southeast Michigan, as well as a couple in North Carolina and Virginia. And then a group called Binghamton Methodist Assisted Living Centers. They have 24 assisted living centers across the state of Michigan. And then also Samaritas, who has nursing homes, assisted living centers, and other types of in-home care support in the Detroit area.
So how many have you made so far, Dan?
Well, we actually have supplied several hundred so far and donated. In fact, I'm driving out later today to donate some more to another assisted living center. So we produced and supplied about 500 to date, and we have another 500 or so in stock. And we're literally using our 3D printers around the clock, 24/7 through the weekends. As we know, this is going to be a long-term need.
Yeah, you've got an LTU student working on this now, right?
Yeah, so we have an LTU student that's working with our lab manager, and he is supporting our production. He got involved because he was trying to do the same thing at his own 3D printing machine at home and was looking for some support. It's amazing how people just about everywhere have really tried to do whatever they could do to help out in the time of need. So
speaking of need, I guess that's anybody's guess, right? I mean, is there a timeline you can keep doing this until, or you just keep doing it until there's no longer a need?
Yeah, I think we can expect that we will continue to manufacture and donate and support as long as there's a need. The question is that 6 months? Is it 9 months? Is it 12 months? I do believe it's probably longer than you think, especially with things as simple as face shields. Typical businesses that wouldn't necessarily use face shields, including assisted living centers, it's not just about healthcare providers. There's businesses. I'll give you an example. I was in a getting my car repaired yesterday, and I actually wore one of my face shields in, and they said, we're using masks, they're a little bit uncomfortable, and our mechanics would rather use those. So I'm gonna literally take some out and donate them to that auto mechanic repair establishment. So a lot of individual businesses would probably use these and have never used them in the past. Mm-hmm. They're very comfortable. They're easy to breathe out of, unlike some of the cloth and N95 masks, and are protective enough for at least that working environment. So there's no reason we couldn't see us supplying this to local businesses for many months to come.
At some point, do you think you'd like to get a sponsor maybe to pay for the resins and things like that, or not?
Yeah. So the good news is when we jumped into this pretty early, as Matt could tell you. And when we got involved, we decided to go out to some people that have traditionally funded us or have considered funding us, particularly foundations. And we reached out to a couple foundations and asked for support and said, you know, we're kind of burning through these 3D printed materials. We've had to bring on some extra help, including an LTU student that we'd like to be able to pay. It would be nice if we can get some money to offset this. In fact, I don't traditionally have the operating budget for this. So, as we got into May, there was we had to make a hard decision. Do we continue to do this or not? We just don't have the operating budget for it. So we were very fortunate to get a foundation to contribute financially to help offset some of our costs of materials and labor. So pretty lucky.
Are you allowed to say who that is, or?
Well, it's still, I'm waiting for them to send out the press release, but.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. All right. Well, maybe we'll talk about it next time then. Okay. Yeah. So, all right. Sounds good. So what else are you hearing out on the front lines in terms of how things are going out there?
I'm working closely with all the hospitals, right? Beaumont, Henry Ford Health Systems, DMC. And I'm also working with a lot of the assisted living centers I mentioned, and also the emergency medical unit at the city of Detroit. As you know, they're propping up at the state fairgrounds and at TCF, the old Cobo Hall, emergency medical units. So I've been working directly with the procurement team to understand what they need every day. And that need is changing, right? At one time it was masks, and then once enough masks came in, then it was gowns. And then, believe it or not, even at one time it was body bags. Trying to find here who in Michigan can manufacture those critical, PPE, items was something that we focused on early on, like literally 6-7 weeks ago. Since we were so well connected to the manufacturing community here in Michigan, we cast a net and we said, hey, who can make personal protection equipment? We need hand sanitizer. We need gowns. We need masks. We need face shields. And we were very fortunate to have a lot of people step up and say, hey, we're willing. We were able to help get them designs and critical things to you know, put them in a position to start manufacturing. And then we also connected them directly to the hospitals, to the emergency medical units, and to the assisted living center, so they could find an outlet for the supply, right? And the purchase of those. Some are donating, some are charging, some are donating only to healthcare providers and then charging to businesses. But what I've been amazed at is we now are working with over 100 Michigan manufacturers that are making some form of personal protection equipment, whether it's parts for ventilators or respirators, or it's masks and gowns. We've had just about everybody step up to the plate. I couldn't be prouder of the manufacturing community and what it's done. Sometimes we talk a lot about the heroes in the healthcare, you know, what the healthcare providers are doing, which is absolutely critical. But sometimes we forget about the manufacturers that are stepping up to help out in this time of need.
Yeah, could you give us a couple of examples of that? I know the accelerator has several clients that are involved in this efforts as well. So let's give them a little bit of a shout out too.
Yeah, so Pingree in Detroit, they are a manufacturer of leather goods, and that what they use is upcycled leather from automotive industry, like scrap leather, and they create shoes and bags and other things. And then this time they stepped up to start stitching PPE as well as make face shields, and are providing them in many cases via donation. We also had, you know, companies that like Contrast Engineering, that is one of our CAD designers and an expert in injection molding, partner with an injection molder to create face masks with HEPA filters, and is now supplying those into local healthcare providers. And we have a wide variety of companies you wouldn't expect, right? We started working with distilleries locally, right? So, you know, Valentine Vodka and Ferndale, Detroit Distillery in Detroit are now making hand sanitizers because they have the capabilities to make alcohol-based products. Great story in Vaughn Industries. You may know Vaughn is a manufacturer of sporting goods and hockey equipment.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Since they have capabilities in stitching, they got into stitching gowns. And then Isaacs, who is the Industrial Sewing Institute in Detroit, was already well connected with big and small sewing operations across the state. And they enlisted over 80 stitching operations and even small seamstresses that came together to make masks and gowns, and are coordinating group purchasing with the state of Michigan for the emergency medical centers. So just great stories all around us, guys.
Okay, we're getting the signal that we got about 2 minutes left. So why don't we talk about a little bit more of how can people reach out if they've got some ideas for you or they want to participate? You said you have 100 different companies participating. I'm sure you'd welcome more, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, coordinating very closely with Michigan Economic Development Corporation and the Pure Michigan Business Connect program. So they have an online portal where you can list if you are already making personal protection equipment or have the interest to. And then they are also coordinating on the demand side with hospitals, nursing homes, and emergency medical units to make sure they're aware of the locally made goods. And they've even provided a retooling grant to help support the investment to help companies transition and make personal protection equipment. Oakland County has done the same for Oakland County manufacturers. I'm on the review committee for that grant, and literally have made a number of awards so far in helping local manufacturers like Vaughn Sports and Detroit Sewn convert their, you know, manufacturing operations to make, you know, these critical healthcare protection items.
Okay.
All right. And if people want more information on the accelerator and its programs, where should they go?
Yeah. So they can go to centropolis.com and reach out to us directly. They can also contact me, Dan Radomski. My contact information is on our website.
All right. Thanks very much, Dan Radomski, Executive Director of the Lawrence Technological University City of Southfield Centropolis Accelerator. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Dan. Okay.
And we'll be back in another minute with another segment of the M Squared TechCast.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. be invaluable, be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
What do you get at Lawrence Technological University? Everything. Great labs and studios, supportive professors, plus a full campus life, NAIA athletics, and all the software you need to succeed. Be smart. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan. We never know who's going to start that, right?
Yeah. Well, we can't really point at each other like we used to when we just did audio, you know? I mean, that's
Or even when we were in the studio, which John had to stop doing, what, 6-7 weeks ago? By order
of Governor Whitmer, right? I think this is our sixth week on Zoom, so yeah.
We're all getting used to it.
Yeah. The new normal, I guess, so. Let's introduce John Bold, who's the CEO of Patho3Gen Solutions, right? I know I got that wrong originally on the invite.
You got that right, Mike.
Hey, let's talk a little bit about what do you guys do? I mean, this may be the first time that folks have ever heard of you, and I know what you do, but why don't you share what you do a little bit, and then we'll work our way through these talking points.
Okay. Well, Mike and Matt, first, thanks for having us today. We really appreciate the opportunity. What do we do? We make foot sanitizing stations, and people won't really know what that is, so I'll just give a quick, brief explanation. What it basically is, it's a high-tech mat. It's 24 by 24 by 2 inches, so it's relatively small. You place it in front of an entranceway or an exitway all around the perimeter of facilities, or you can put it inside facilities to protect certain rooms or certain factory places inside a facility. And it's real simple. Although it's a complicated piece of technology, you simply plug it in to a normal circuit, normal outlet, and instantly you can have all carriers, all employees, all customers, all medical workers, if it's a hospital or if it's a medical unit, just step on it. In 8 seconds, it kills all major pathogens and viruses within 8 seconds. So it's the type of tool that doesn't need a lot of maintenance. It doesn't need manpower like the UV robots and things like that. And how does it work? Well, we own the patents for the revolutionary technology. So it's not just a UV product. It is actually the combination of ozone and UV that provides the highest kill rates. So we own the patents on that technology. So, for example, the ozone will crack the shell of any pathogen or virus in 1 second. And then within 7 seconds, the UV kills or denatures the DNA or the RNA, rendering the virus, dead. Basically dead.
Wow, that's I didn't realize when I was reading the background that you plugged this in and it had a sort of electrical component to it. You think of mats and these various companies that service commercial operations with these mats and they throw them down, take them out. That's kind of what I was thinking here. So this is much more involved. So
yeah, this is what we would call continuous clean. That means a facility may have 1,000, 2,000 people that walk in and out of it every day. We know that the average hospital has 5,000 people that walk in and out every day. This is continuous clean. This seals off the perimeter so that any pathogen or any virus that could potentially walk into the facility is killed before it gets into the facility. And we know from independent lab studies that once pathogens or viruses get into a facility, within 24 hours, they go airborne and they end up on your clothes, they end up on high touch surfaces, they end up on medical equipment, they end up just about everywhere. So what we are ensuring in the world of COVID-19 is that if you focus on the floor along with your other protocols, the other protocols that you use, you can basically ensure that you are not spreading the disease or the virus within the facility, or just as importantly, like they're using it up in the New York hotel, where the doctors and the nurses are going for sanitization. They walk on it on the way in to sanitize and walk on it on the way out, so that they're not bringing COVID-19 all throughout the medical facilities that they're serving. So if you look at a CDC study that was published 3 weeks ago, they showed that 50% of the medical workers in a COVID containment unit walked out of the facility with COVID-19 on their feet.
Hmm. You know, I never would have thought of that angle before. Everyone's so concerned about wearing gowns and masks and shields and gloves. And then I know the doctors wear these, I'm not sure what the formal name is, like little booties that go around their plastic, go around their shoes. But with all the other folks walking in and out, I just never thought of that before. Now, have you guys been doing something in this area previous?
We've been in business for 2 years. We designed and developed the product about 2 years ago. We perfected it about 9 months ago. We're on the ground in hospitals, assisted living facilities, food processing factories, places like that, where it's absolutely vital, you know, that you keep these pathogens and or these viruses out. One of the things that we notice now, we're getting a lot of inquiries from the retail sector, from the food processing sector, even people like Walmart. What we see is the new normal, and think of it in your own world. Think about how you feel. If you're going to go into a place once we get critical infrastructure reopened and we get the economy going again, if you're going to walk into a place, you're going to want to see what I call visible signs of safety. So the first thing you're going to see if you walk into a facility that has our unit is the mat that you step on. It tells you that you're done and that you've killed X amount of pathogens and or viruses. And then you can walk into that facility. We've also got a partner that does infrared technology so that they can read the temperature while you're standing on the unit. It can read the temperature and basically tell you you should enter, or maybe potentially you should not enter that facility because you could be infected.
Really? That's interesting.
Okay, so who invented this technology?
There was a gentleman, I don't recall his name. The technology itself was actually invented like 5 or 6 years ago. We purchased the patents and the rights to the technology. I'll think of his name in 1 second. A genius of a gentleman. So we actually bought the rights to that technology and the patents, and then we developed the product. Oh, and by the way, we have patent pending on the wands. So we will make various size handheld wands that can be used also to sanitize high touch surfaces, clothing, things like that. So we're in design phase for that as we speak.
Huh, interesting. Again, what sort of volumes are you at? I mean, is it something that within a few months you could distribute to a whole lot of different companies, or are you still kind of bringing that up?
Yeah, no, we actually we were prepared for manufacturing, meaning that we were prepared to do multiple site manufacturing. So we've secured primary, secondary, and tertiary manufacturing. So right now we can pump out about 100 and some units a week. We're moving up capacity to be able to do about 500 a month. And if necessary, we can involve the U.S. government in finding us additional manufacturing, because there may be a very, very large demand as we go from wave one and everybody has to prepare, plan A, plan B, and plan C to deal with wave two. And we're seeing a huge high demand curve right now that's coming through our door as people realize that they can secure the entire perimeter and keep these nasty things from coming into a facility so that their other protocols are enhanced exponentially when they use them inside the facility.
Do you have some price? I'm sorry, Matt, go ahead.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Go ahead, Mike.
Price points, is it just the one size, 24 by 24? Are there bigger sizes? What are the price points? People are want to know that, of course.
Yeah. Right now, it's what I would call a high-grade industrial piece of equipment. It's very complicated. So the price points go anywhere from 22 to 28,000, depending on the volume of the purchase. So if you purchase one, it's X. If you purchase 100, it's Y. If you purchase 200, it's Z. So we have a tiered system. As far as pieces of equipment with this type of technology, it's relatively inexpensive when you compare it to like a simple thing like a UV robot that generally takes 24 hours to cleanse a room, and it can cost anywhere from $45,000 up to $80,000 per unit.
Wow!
So our units are fairly reasonable in this world.
All right. Yeah. So that's great, and. Who do you think? I mean, hotels obviously would be a big one for this, right? Not to mention hospitals.
I would think airports and airlines too.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we started to make a list, and then we noticed the list never ended. So, if you look at it logically, nobody's going to want to walk on an airplane unless they feel safe, right? So, if you have these in the jetway, you have to stand in the jetway anyway. Everybody standing in the jetway can stand on it for 8 seconds, and then they can guarantee they're not dragging any viruses or any pathogens into the plane, which, you know, as I said, once you drag them in, they go airborne. So we can think of restaurants, we can think of retail centers, food distribution, even if you look at the workers that were struggling at Amazon, right? Mm-hmm. That they didn't feel that there was enough being done in order to keep them safe. You can see these all over those type of distribution centers to keep the employees safe. So we believe that if the workers are comfortable, regardless of whether it's a factory, a business office, a retail store, a liquor store, whatever. If the workers feel comfortable that they're being protected, then the customers are going to feel comfortable that they're being protected, and that'll help to bring the people out and the economy back to where we had it.
Yeah, hopefully soon. I mean, we're all hurting right now, right? So go ahead.
We've got a little bit over a minute left, so let's have your shameless plug here. If people want more information on this product, how do they get it?
Yeah, it's real simple. It's Patho3Gen, PathoThreeGen.com. You can go directly in there. We've got all the science. We've got all of the independent lab studies. We've got descriptions of the product, usage, manuals. We got the whole ball of wax.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks very much, John. We appreciate you being on the show today, and we'll have to get you back here for a progress report here in a few months, hopefully as everything begins to reopen. I know, 32 states are opening this month. I think that might be a little ambitious, but we'll see how that plays out, right? So.
Yep. Well, we hope to be part of that solution, and we really appreciate Matt, Mike. We really appreciate you having us on today. Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, thanks very much, John Bolt. And we'll be back in just a minute with another segment of the M2 TechCast. Right now, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're watching MITechNews.tv.
Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast here at PodcastDetroit.com and MITechNews.tv.
Yeah, and as we all know, we left our studio about 7 weeks ago, so we're joining the Zoom world out there, and it's working out fairly well. And we've got some great guests, another round of great guests here. We have calling in. I'm not sure where you guys are based. Where are you calling in from?
Ann Arbor.
Yeah. Ah, well, so am I. Okay, just right around the corner. It's Raya and Benit Keitel.
Katiel.
All right, great. And so one of the things that your daughter is heavily involved in is a group called GLOW, which until I got her talking points today, I was not familiar with, which stands for Girls Lead Our World. Why don't you run the ball here, Kaya, and tell us a little bit about what you're doing with that group.
Thank you. So GLOW is a women's empowerment organization that I actually started. And our goal is to create a network of people that can help empower and inspire women around their communities. I noticed that with like an army or a network in your corner, you really can make that extra mile and go a lot farther. So that's our goal. Our website is glowglobal.org. And this kind of all started with my mom. She's a gynecologist in India. And she saw firsthand a practice known as female infanticide, which, it's the deliberate killing of newborns just because they're girls. And obviously, with the stunning realization that this actually happened. So I couldn't let it happen anymore, and I needed to be part of the solution. So
it's still going on now in the 21st century?
Yeah, at a very smaller degree now, but it is still happening in the most rural communities. Yeah.
Wow.
Around 40 million girls, as of the 2001 India census, have been killed.
Amazing. I had no idea. So,
yeah.
So your mother was involved in saving some of those girls, right?
Yeah, she saved some of these girls, and they were put into an orphanage. So around 8th or 9th grade, I partnered with Rotary to like educate these girls into classroom-based skills. So that they could go to college, or when they age out of the orphanage, they are not put on the streets. So with doing that, I noticed that some of these girls actually didn't want to go to college, and they didn't want to, or they couldn't go to college, either one. So we kind of shifted our skills more into skill-based training. So one of the girls actually wanted to be a hairdresser. So we got her skills. We got her placed in a hairdresser. She learned the skills, and now she's like self-sufficient. She has her own chair there. She's doing really well now. So going through this around 10th or 9th grade, taking economics in high school and all, I noticed that the problem was, and I coined it as such, as this, the marginalization and the degradation of women. And I wrote a white paper on it. And the white paper, just briefly to go into it, it kind of states that women are considered a burden and weak, and then they don't actually have the opportunity to show themselves or get an education, and then men are then favored, and that cycle just keeps continuing.
All right. So another thing that you guys are doing is you're working with International Rotary right now. Let's tie in. We have a PPE theme going on here in the show today. Let's talk a little bit about that. What are you doing with Rotary?
Well,
I can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah.
Her organization, because of this marginalization that she talked about, she did a symposium, which was a great success in her school. So she came to Rotary and she said, look, you know, we need to help these girls out, not just there, but here. And my wife got involved with that project. And about a week, about maybe a couple of months ago, they were sitting on a dinner table, and you want to tell that story a little bit more?
Yeah. So we were kind of sitting on the dinner table just talking normally, and she was kind of talking about how she doesn't have PPE and masks at her office. She's a physician. And so I was stunned by this because we're a nation that we help other nations get PPE and stuff, but we can't provide, like, for our doctors and ourselves. I was just kind of stunned by that. So I kind of twisted his arm to get some, to access some supply chains that he's known. And we just kind of ordered them. And at first it was just us distributing them to places, but then Rotary hopped on board, was 1,000% into this project, and even promised to reimburse us.
Wow.
From there, we started just distributing masks, and we started this drive.
So she ordered she ordered me to order 4,000 masks that were going to physicians and the nurses, just like my wife, who was a frontline worker helping the patients. And when she went and told this story to Rotary, Rotary said, well, we'll reimburse you for 100% of those masks. In fact, we want to do more. So Rotary got involved, and we launched a project called Rotary100k.org, which is basically essentially getting 100,000 masks to frontline workers here in Michigan. And it just started off because students like her have taken charge of this, you know, life-changing events, and seeing how they can help resolve it. So kudos to our new generation for helping us out with this big thing.
Now, are these masks cloth masks, throwaway masks? What exactly are they?
They're actually a real medical grade mask. This is a K9, KN95, sorry, KN95. And then we have other protective masks, and then just blue masks that we've distributed all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, the average person going into the grocery store doesn't need a 95 mask. That's really for the medical and first responder folks, right?
So, yeah.
But so now the governor's ruling is that everybody needs masks. And as you can imagine, a lot of the vulnerable people, or, you know, our high-risk people, nursing homes is a good example. We are donated, I think, 100 masks to nursing homes locally. In fact, she sent some KN95 masks to workers who work at nursing homes. We've donated how many to Pittsfield Township?
We donated about 500 of the blue masks. We got 500 to the Pittsfield PD and fire over there, and some U of M students, U of M and MSU students that needed it, that still live in the dorms, still need that. So we gave it to them.
And about 1,000 to Michigan and 1,000 to St. Joe's
Hospital. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So talk a little bit about the formation of GLOW. I want to go back to that for just a moment here. So when was this organization founded, and what have you been doing with that organization?
Well, this organization, I started the organization around 10th or 11th grade, even though I've been working on stuff throughout high school. Organization was specifically founded in 10th or 11th grade. And from there, we've done a lot of cool things. We hosted, as my dad said, a women's empowerment symposium for the kids at my school, where people could just get in touch with some powerful women from our community who come from different backgrounds and face different challenges, and just ask questions, got advice, figured out what they were doing. And it was kind of like a career fair. They got to see what they wanted to do and ask questions. It was really cool. And at first, yeah, I would expected like 5 or 10 students to sign up and come. We actually got around 200. It was a huge success. Yeah. And we've hosted a few other symposiums from there. And now we're focusing on the Rotary 100K now.
Okay. Go ahead, Matt.
All right. So where are you now in terms of your education? Are you, I didn't find this out before the event, but are you still in high school? Are you in college now, or what are you doing?
I am a senior in high school. So, I mean, with school closing, I'm technically, I want to say I'm a freshman in college, but I am a senior in high school now.
Okay. And one of the Ann Arbor high schools, or?
Yeah, I go to Ann Arbor Pioneer High School.
Okay. All right. Cool.
Yeah. So we're trying to keep her in Michigan. And hopefully she will go to one of the universities in Michigan. She has been talking to a lot of those universities locally, as well as in the East Coast, and we want to keep her here. We want to have her.
Ahead, make your shameless plug.
Well, I was going to say, I know of a technological university in Southfield that is really good, and very good at online education. We give every incoming freshman a laptop with all of the software they'll need for their educational program. And that made the switch to online education pretty easy for us because all of the students already had a high-end laptop with all the right software on it. So, I mean, we all want to go back to the classroom, but for right now we can't. So that's where we're at right now. Our summer programs are all going to be online. So,
and I'm told from a reliable source, Vineet, that you'd like her to go to the University of Michigan. Right here in Ann Arbor.
That's myself,
you know. So
that's great. No, yeah, you know, Michigan, MSU. She's applied to Barnard, Wellesley, because all the women colleges.
And, all the Seven Sisters. Yes, right.
Yeah. So yeah. So you know, her motto. I love this motto, by the way, that she came up with. It says, "The future may not know us yet." What is it?
History may not know us yet, but the future will.
So, good. Very good.
I like it.
She's out of there. So, we appreciate you getting, us on and getting, encouraging kids like her to showcase what they want to do in society.
So if people want to help this effort, how do they get a hold of you and how do they get a hold of the GLOW organization?
Well, if they want to contact GLOW and just kind of join the effort, they can go to glowglobal.org. It has a website that's all of our information is on there. And from there, they can also look at Rotary 100K, see what we're doing with Rotary 100K, and go visit the site directly from there. If they need to order masks, if they need masks, they can fill out the form that's on there as well. They can join the effort. There's a lot of cool things if they want to check out the website. That's the best way, I think.
And Vineet, talk a little bit about what you do with Sky 7 Ventures. I just found out about, I was looking at it over the weekend, and I'm not familiar with that organization either. Talk a little bit about that.
So Sky 7 Ventures essentially is an incubator or an accelerator that helps the companies at an early stage. I also sit on the board for Anderson Institute out of Wayne State University, and I help with Ann Arbor Spark here as well. So our goal is to help early stage companies get formed and to a stage where they can go and raise funding for the next round. We have about 22 companies on our portfolio, and we focus on fintech and health tech. Those are our two focus areas for us.
Ah, well, you'll have to get GLOW as one of your accelerator portfolio companies.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
I know there's no bias there or anything, right? So.
Yeah. But Dad doesn't know anything, so you know it's always the case.
You're about to get a lot smarter, believe me.
Yeah, I
remember with She's my kids. Little, I'm
31, but I'm always stupid too, right?
So I was only dumb from about age 14 to about age 18, so you know.
Yeah,
Dad
doesn't know anything about anything yet. So, you know, trying to coax her into joining one of our organizations, but nope, she's hell-bent into getting into GLOW and fixing the women empowerment issue, I think.
Well, that's Sounds a great, great issue.
All right, one more time. Give us that GLOW website, Kaya. And maybe not Kaya.
Yeah.
It's glowglobal.org, and the Rotary 100K is rotary100k.org.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks very much, Rhea and Vineet Katiel. Thanks for being with us today here on the M Squared TechCast. I hope I didn't butcher the names too badly.
No, it was great. It was thank great. You so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thanks. We'll be back in just a minute with another segment of the M Squared TechCast. For right now, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're watching at podcastdetroit.com and mitechnews.tv.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America.
Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
What do you get at Lawrence Technological University? Everything. Great labs and studios, supportive professors, plus a full campus life, NAIA athletics, and all the software you need to succeed. Be smart. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Thanks for listening to
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
What do you get at Lawrence Technological University? Everything.
.edu.
It's great to see everyone out there working so hard on PPE and disinfection and everything else. That's perfect. We need that. We're going to do more.
Well, we're back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast, and we have with us today our resident COVID-19 expert, Fred Brown, who's been working on these kinds of problems for three decades now, and so knows his way around a pandemic. Welcome, Fred.
Well, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Okay. So, you wanted to talk about a few things, and I certainly wanted to start with something just to see how much hope this actually offers us. The treatment with remdesivir and the vaccine being developed at Oxford. So let's talk about both of those for a second.
Yeah, those were exciting. So I don't want to get everyone overly excited, but remdesivir was, I thought, one of our best chances. It's an already developed drug. We developed it for other diseases, and now it turns out that it's helpful for COVID. Now, we're just starting to get results. There have been two clinical studies that are underway. One is called SIMPLE, and that one's too simple. You know, it's not going to tell us very much. The other one's called ACT, and that's being done by the National Institutes of Health. And that actually indicated that remdesivir is going to be, if we use it at the right time for extremely ill patients, so it's just for one category of patients, we can reduce the time that people spend in the hospital from 14 days to 10 days, which can really be helpful in an outbreak. If you're starting to run short of hospital beds, you can start releasing people earlier. It's not going to be something for everybody all the time, but it's a nice weapon in the arsenal, no doubt about it. Hmm.
Dr. Fauci was optimistic about it. Is he being too optimistic about it?
No. So it's early, right? What they do in these clinical trials is they conduct them, and they have what they call an interim review, and they have an independent body go in and take a look at what the results are saying so far. And the results were mixed. They weren't perfect. We've gone halfway through the trial, so we'll know the final results of the trial in a couple of months. And what they showed was there's no reduction in mortality. And that was disappointing because that was the primary, what they call the primary endpoint. That's what you really like to see is reduction in mortality. We didn't see that. And so they backed off on that. We saw a little bit of it. The reduction of mortality rate was from 11% to 8%. The problem was what they call the p-value or the power of the study wasn't strong enough to detect a statistical difference. So statistically, we have no change in the mortality rate from remdesivir to placebo.
It's sort of like within a poll that's within the margin of error.
You got it. That's a perfect way to describe the system. Absolutely, man. And so they decided we're not going to go for that anymore. We're going to go for reduction in time. And of course, it's an injectable, so the injectable also, you know, kind of limits where you're gonna apply the drug. You're gonna have to be in a hospital basically to have it done right. So, but the nice thing is, it's cheap, it's available, it's there, and for some patients, it's gonna make a difference. I think short term, the best thing to go after is what they call convalescent plasma, and that means they spun down. They found someone who was sick, got well. They took that person's blood, spun it down. And they found antibodies in it that help you if you're really sick or if you're a healthcare worker to have a prophylactic effect. So it covers, it kind of does prevents you from getting so easily infected. Which, and this thing has a heck of an infection rate. I don't need to tell you, it's everywhere. So though I think convalescent, if you're in the hospital and you got a choice, I'd go probably for the convalescent plasma on the first round. And then if you're getting really, really sick, then go for the remdesivir. If you're at a good teaching hospital, they may have access to it.
There was also a little study that came out of Henry Ford Health System about a steroid that showed some promise. What have you heard about that?
Yeah, the steroids can knock down your immune response. And so what happens is if you over-respond to this in the lungs, it can really tear you apart. And so the steroids kind of calm things down a little bit and help in that regard. So, yes, we expect to see those kind of results. Those are available. But they're just they're trying to reduce the immunological response. It's not going to, sadly, it may prevent you having what they call a cytokine storm. That's the hope is.
Now, this may be a naive question, but it's been nagging at me. The virus, it seemed like every other thing, its prime motive is to survive. And if it kills its host, doesn't that sort of defeat that prime motive? That's the part I don't understand.
You're absolutely right. That's right on. They call something called the CFR, the case fatality rate. What you're looking for there is how often does your host die and the virus also die with you? And it turns out that things like the flu have one of about 0.1% case fatality rate. So that there, you know, it's going to be on for a long time. You know, you're not killing anybody and you're getting people infected enough to be sick. That's disappointing, but it's at least not going to be, well, it's still deadly for people who are older, have more complicating conditions, and in some cases let the flu run away. But, sadly, it does kill quite a few people, even at 0.1%. This, we think, has a case fatality rate of between probably, so the lowest numbers I've seen is 0.3. So that's already three times higher than flu, up to as much as, well, originally we thought it was had something around the 1.5 to 2 level. And that was really scary because that's a high, you know, if you start multiplying that by millions, you're getting a lot of deaths.
Yeah, that's 7 million dead Americans if it's 2%. Yeah. So,
yes, yeah. That really gets scary, right? But it isn't, we don't think now it's that high. So we're backing off a little bit. Good. Most people think it's probably in the 0.5 to 1% range, which is still 50% to twice as bad as the influenza virus. The really bad ones are things like MERS and SARS, which these is related to. Those had death rates of kind of 3 to 5. And then your host did die out too quick, and they did die out. But this one's sort of right in that range where it's killing a lot more than we like to see, but not too many that it dies out itself. So it's a really difficult one this time. We're sort of caught.
So what about the Oxford vaccine? What have you heard about that?
Oxford vaccine, yes, Sir John Bell. Yes, Sir John is a great guy, and he runs Oxford Vaccine Group, and they have a vaccine that they've done a lot of safety tests on already. They've gone through 4 animal models, which is great. They're now into human clinical trials. I've seen some of the ways they're studying this. It looks very efficient. They think they can get some answers for us whether or not. So the first question is it safe? So they've looked at animal models to judge that. And they've also looked at animal models to judge whether you have an immune response. Luckily, in both cases, even in monkeys, which are sort of the gold standard for animal models in this space, they're getting good results. So now they've injected people. That joins a list of 6 other companies that have started to kind of test what they call phase 1, where they have healthy human volunteers. And then if he's safe, and we're pretty sure he's going to be reasonably safe initially, to at least test this. Then we go to efficacy trials. And what you do there is you inject a large population, say 1,000 people, with a placebo, and you inject another 1,000 people with what you think is going to be the properly dosed drug. Now you have to do some tests to understand dosing, and that's quite complicated. That's where most fail. Then you let people go out in the world, and they need to be in a place that has active infection, right? And then you compare the placebo group with the people who've been injected group after about 6 months, and you see whether there's been an effect. And that, so it takes a little bit of time, but he's well on his way.
All right, so 32 states are opening, I guess, this week or so.
It'll be 40, yeah.
40, yeah. So are we going to have the Sweden effect there, where it's just kind of see what happens and go for it, or what?
So Sweden is kind of a special case. We've missed our Sweden window. What Sweden did was they clamped down really hard right up front. They knew it was coming. They protected all the older people who were going to have a high death rate. They still decentralized in 20 states, but they sort of have a central coordinating group. And so they basically let things rip after they protected their people, but they did it early. And if you remember, I was talking a little bit about exponential growth. If you wait too long, all of a sudden the virus gets into the exponential growth phase, and it just takes off on you. And we're already in that stage. So there's a phase called containment, and that's, we can try to do that to the virus if you're before the exponential growth. And then there's mitigation. That's after the disaster. Well, unfortunately, we sort of missed the containment window in February, March. That was when that's when the United States had a chance to pull off the Sweden experiment, and we sort of missed it. You know, so unfortunately, now we're in a situation where we got to mitigate instead of contain. So having said all that, it's going to be now that we're opening up these states, it's going to be a challenge, because you know, it's not like Sweden where they've suppressed it initially and then stopped sort of the overall growth. We're in a high growth phase of the virus, and so I think we're going to have pockets of outbreak, sadly, for a while here until we get things settled down.
How bad do you think it might get? I know you're going to speculate, but go ahead and speculate.
So I run some models, as you know, and I see a lot of other models, and our models are showing, sadly, that right now we're at a death rate of about 2,000 a week, and it's plateaued. You know, so we're pretty steady right now at 2,000 a week. We'd like to see it come back down again, because then you're on a nice trajectory. Right now, it's just a flat line at 2,000 a week, pretty much. And if we open up the states like they're saying they're going to, without as much controls as we think they might need, we think it's going to, and you'll see the effect in about 3 weeks, doubling. So about 4,000 a week, sadly, in about 3 to 5 weeks.
And then you think the states are going to rethink opening and maybe scale it back, or what?
Well, there are two things that could happen. One is that we could learn a lot more about the virus and get smarter about it and decide how we want to open, what we want to open, what's safe, what's not so safe. And we'll get good data sets on that and sort of understand the general. But we need to understand three things. The first thing that is, you know, how prevalent is the virus and how active is it? Second thing is, how at risk is me as a person? And the third thing is, what am I doing as an activity? And you kind of put those three things together, and you kind of say that if you can, you know, reduce the activities that are really causing a lot of viral spread, if you can push down the virus in terms of activity, and you can kind of protect the guys who are at higher risk, then you're going to reduce the death rate a lot. But if we just say, you know, everything's open, go for it, and everyone can do whatever they want, then everyone's going to have to make an individual decision. And we don't have, you know, sadly, individuals don't have as much data as you know, to kind of look every time at the big computer and figure out where the model is and figure things out. It's going to take some time and trial and error. And by that time, it could be challenging. The other big question is whether we're going to be able to do tracing or not. If we can do tracing, we can get ahead of things. That's going to take some time, but eventually that'll be our most effective way of actually stopping the viral spread, is the tracing after you get diagnosed.
Now, Michigan has the lockdown going until May 15th. I suspect with our governor that may be extended, but I'm not sure. What would you recommend the governor to do?
Well, I'm not consulting to Governor Whitmore. She has a good team already in place. I do consult to 17 other governments. And my suggestion is to learn a lot from what other people are doing. So Georgia, South Carolina, Oklahoma, you want to watch those guys and see what's happening, to see what happens, right? And
so the Florida beaches, I saw some news reporting from there today. Clearwater's open again, but people actually seem to be being pretty sensible about it. There were family groups, but they were a good 20 feet apart.
If you do that, that's absolutely great. You know, you keep socially distant, you be responsible, you know, you keep some masks on when you're close in, and so that I think you can do quite a bit. But if you don't, a friend of mine was riding a bicycle the other day, actually yesterday, it was a beautiful day, went to Dairy Queen, and he said basically it was chaos. People were all really close together waiting in line for the, you know, the ice cream, and they weren't socially distancing. They had social distance markers on the ground. All the kids were all over the place.
I don't want to be the first person to die for a flurry. You know,
that's right. You don't want to be that guy. No. Although I could be. I love those things.
You know? Yeah, you don't get to look like I do without liking a few of those things too.
That's so, right.
Yeah, right.
That's the kind of behavior that really is unfortunate, because you know that's sort of a wasted opportunity. If we had done things right, we could have, you know, done other things as well. But now we've got the Dairy Queen blow up, and we got to kind of crush down on some other things that maybe we would have liked to do.
I watched your hour and 45-minute show on IT and the D. Very thorough. Very scary.
Yeah, I would recommend that if you. Dave, I know that's up online someplace, right? Isn't it?
It's on the IT and the D Facebook page. It's out on the IT and the D YouTube channel and the Podcast Detroit YouTube channel.
Okay. There are a lot worse ways to spend an hour and 45 minutes. There's a lot of bad Netflix movies out there. Just skip one of those.
Remember how much time you wasted on Tiger King, and then go ahead and watch that.
I gave up about three episodes into that. I was just like, why am I watching this? I don't like any of these people.
Well, and with 10,000 people, last I looked, Fred, 10,000 people had actually looked at that video. So,
oh, wow. That's great. Yeah.
And Dave said they were all drinking heavily after watching it.
Oh, I think I mentioned to him right at the end of the show that I must have had about two dozen messages that came in from people that were like, dude, I always drink when I'm listening and watching you guys, but like with this guy on, I'm getting hammered. What the hell?
So the liquor folks want to thank you for that, Fred.
Right.
This episode brought to you by the American Distillers Guild.
Yes. Okay.
Hey, we need those guys. They're making some great disinfectant now. You know, they've moved.
That's
over.
True.
Well,
man,
yeah. Great stuff.
Yeah. All right. Well, so we're probably getting close to 13 minutes here. We had a little late start. So any kind of parting thoughts you want to leave everyone with so they'll be scared to death until next week? Or?
Well, if you are scared to death, there are a couple of things you might want to think about in terms of your last will and testament. I know it's a little bit but, you know, listen to Susie Orman and get a revocable trust, get a power of attorney, and get power of finance out there so that if you do end up, sadly, you know, with a situation that you can't manage your own affairs anymore, you've got something in place that allows people to help you. Because otherwise, you get all tied up in the courts and take a long time and cost a lot of money. And by that time, it's all over. So it is something you probably want to just have in line. The other thing is I'd recommend is write down who you're contacting a lot. Because if you come down with the illness or if your friends come down with the illness, you can at least then decide whether you were at risk or not. You know, and I think that'll be important. Starting to write down some of your contacts and who you've had contact with and where you've been. I think as things open up, it'll be good to have a record for yourself, just so you can put yourself at ease a little bit to say, you know, that Walgreens episode or that person I thought I contacted didn't come down with it, you know, so everything's good. So that'll give you some peace of mind as we start opening up and you realize that things are going to start creeping back up again in terms of the case rates.
I've been going to Myers to do my shopping because it's a big store with big aisles. That's and I good. Go as soon as they open first thing in the morning after the cleaning crew has been in.
That's it.
And it's like really not very many people in there, and everyone's giving everybody a wide berth, you know. So
that's perfect. You know, there are ways of kind of deciding whether or not a store is active, and you know, are they kind of counting out how many people are allowed in at a time? Are they keeping social distancing up? Do they have long lines for people getting close? Do they wipe down things after things have been used? Are they washing their hands pretty regularly? Well, every employees really should wash their hands about every 30 minutes, believe it or not, in order to keep their own infection levels down. Are people wearing masks? Are masks being afforded or given out as you get into the store? Those are really good practices. And if you I would prefer, you know, if I were of our age, then I think it's wise to kind of watch for that good practice being done before you go into the store.
Sounds good. And I know that all your videos, I've been working with your webmaster at fredbrown.com. So if people want to look at previous videos that you shot with us, I even sent them the IT and the D video so they can post that as well.
Oh, great.
So all that information is at fredbrown.com.
Well, thanks for the time. Right. I appreciate it. Like always, great to see you guys. And I'm looking forward to next week. We'll see what happens when we start opening things up. I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, it's going to be interesting.
Okay. Well, thanks very much, our infectious disease expert, Fred Brown, for being with us. I want to thank Fred and all of our guests today, Vineet Katil and his daughter, Reva, John Bolt from Patho 3Gen Solutions. And we kicked off the show with Dan Radomski, director of the Lawrence Tech City of Southfield Centropolis Accelerator. So we'll be back again at 2 p.m. Eastern Time next Monday. For right now, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're watching the MI Tech News TV M Squared TechCast.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast.